everyone, with WonderCon coming up in Anaheim, California on March 29th, 30th, and 31st, we wanted to let you know that the Comic Source will be there, bringing you live coverage of the convention with photos, live tweetings of panels, creator interviews, cosplay, and a whole lot more. Also, we'll be having giveaways throughout the weekend for fans attending the convention. We'll have tons of lanyards to give away, as well as one lucky fan each day can win an iPad full of comics. So to celebrate Batman's 80th anniversary, we filled several iPads full of great Batman stories, along with a few other of our favorites like Harbinger from Valiant, Clone from Robert Kirkman's Skybound Image imprint, the first 21 issues of Ultimate Spider-Man, and some of our favorite Superman stories. So how do you win? Well, you need to be sure you're following us on social media so you can find Jace, me, on the show floor or in a panel room. And since this is all about Batman, if you can name five of the Batman story arcs that we put on the iPad before missing three, the iPad is yours. We'll have at least one iPad to give away each day of the show, Friday through Sunday. So be sure to brush up on the best Batman story arcs of all time, because it's three strikes and you're out. Also be sure you're following us on Twitter and Instagram all weekend to join in the fun and win some awesome swag. Hope to see you all there. Okay, everybody, it's another Webtoon Wednesday, and today I'm going to be talking with a creator about her strip called Sub-Zero, which I really enjoyed, got caught up on it pretty quick. I don't know if I've ever mentioned on the podcast before, but I'm a big fan of dragons. I used to collect those little pewter dragons when I was a kid, still have them somewhere in a box. So it's creator June Purr. June, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Sure, it's my pleasure. And I always like to welcome people to the show by asking them about their history with comics. So I wonder if you could talk about, childhood. Did you grow up reading comics or manga, American comics? Like, where did your interest first begin in sort of sequential storytelling?
Oh, cool. So for me, I was always really just drawing. I really just like to draw. But I never really was interested in comics or manga or things like that until, like, I'd say one day I just happened to walk into, like, Barnes & Noble's, and I remember I found, like, I found this one, it was a printed webcomic, and basically it had been a webcomic that had been popular online, and I ended up just kind of, it ended up getting published. And so I remember just kind of like looking through those pages, and it was so beautiful because it was in full color. And, I was really young at the time. So I remember I went to her website, and over then, like, I remember seeing that they basically, artists back then, they did all these link exchanges with comics. So it wasn't like now where Webtoons is, a platform. It was just people promoting their comics individually on websites. And so then I found a lot of, a lot of really cool comics that I still follow to this day. Like, some of them have been going on for 10 years. But that was kind of the initial starting point to when I decided that, one day I'm going to have to make a comic, because just seeing their community, it was really small at the time, but you could tell that there was an audience. And, I've always just wanted to make a comic in general. So I think it all kind of stemmed from there.
Now, you mentioned you were really creative before that, doing a lot of illustrating yourself. Mm-hmm. So was it always traditional?
Oh, yeah.
Like, working with pencil and paper, or did you paint? Like, what was your medium of choice?
Yeah, for me, it was always traditional. I only started, like, when I started, when I found webcomics, that's when I said, oh, I need to switch to digital. That's when it kind of, like, really interested me. So, that's basically when I switched. I bought my first tablet, like, immediately after that.
Now, when you were working on this art when you were younger, like, before you kind of discovered the webcomics, were you still in the back of your mind thinking that you could maybe make a career out of it? Or were you thinking you were going to kind of do something else and have a big girl job? Like, what was your thought? Or had you even made up your mind?
For me, I feel like I'm a little bit one of those unfortunate kids who kind of grew up kind of being told that you really need to get, like, a real job or, like, keep art as a hobby. And for me, I know I always found it a little bit insulting because, if you're someone who stays up till like 5, 6 a.m. drawing, I don't think that's like a hobby any longer.
Yeah.
I think that at that point it becomes like an obsession, and like, what you want to do, but kind of always being forced to, kind of push art aside for you know, for something else. So yeah, like I struggled with that a little bit.
And then when you finally decided to go for it, what, were you still kind of doing it on the side, or was there one day when you decided, okay, no matter what it takes, I'm going to become a published creator, or was it still kind of a hobby until it kind of took off?
Well, even now, I'm still kind of working towards it. Like, even if I am a published creator, even now, it's kind of, you know, I happen to be in a position where I have to kind of do two things at once.
Right.
So that's kind of the place I'm in right now. But I do know that in the future, I definitely want to like work towards just doing, you know, comics, illustrations, just full time completely. Yeah, like that's where, that's my goal.
Yeah. I think a lot of us are in that position, you know, still have the day job, but creating or podcasting or whatever. Okay. Well, let's talk about specifically about your title Sub-Zero. Why don't you let our listeners know what the story is kind of all about?
Okay, well, okay, so Sub-Zero, it's really hard to actually kind of explain. I was trying to think of a way that I can, you know, summarize everything. But I think essentially it's kind of one of these enemies turned lover stories. And it takes place in ancient fantasy China with, you know, with dragons. And you have these kind of, it's this warring states period where, you know, these two clans, you know, they're founded by one of these dragons. And so the main character, you know, she descends from one of these, you know, exceptional dragons, and her kingdom is, you know, has been at war with kind of an enemy clan for like 300 years. And so for, at the forefront of, you know, this enemy clan is this prince that she's kind of forced into a political marriage with so that they can kind of calm, you know, they have to kind of calm the war, you know, bring in, tie the clans together so they can end the war. And I think it's mostly about them kind of learning to like grow together, like trust, learning about one another, learning to trust each other, and kind of her realizing that his situation is very different from what she expected. And so, yeah, I think, you know, I guess it makes for an interesting story.
Yeah, I was, you know, I was mentioning the dragons earlier. There's such an kind of an integral part of the story. And we've seen so far with Cairo, we've kind of seen him and his sister, you know, their ability to transition. Clove, not so much yet. So it does make for an interesting aspect of the story, because it's almost like you can tell the story of the humans, but there's also a lot to be explored with the history of the dragons. But I wonder, like, why did you choose dragons? Is there something about them specifically, as a mythical creature that always interested you? Or what was your thought process in choosing dragons as kind of the, almost the building block of the story?
Well, I mean, I think I'm just like you. I've always really liked dragons. I think it's just, you know, they're like a spectacle wherever you put them, you know, and just, I love high fantasy. So, you know, whenever you have that kind of, you know, this giant, you know, behemoth, this creature that's like, you know, extremely powerful, they're, you know, they're very flashy. They're very fun to draw. And so that definitely did impact me to kind of put them in. But I also think it kind of makes sense in their setting, since it's like, you know, it's fantasy Asia. So you have, you know, dragons everywhere. And I think, yeah, in general, they're just really like awesome to draw.
Yeah, and that is true. And what's funny is, you know, you say dragon and it's such a broad term, because if you go back and read stories, there's kind of set more like British type stories, Tolkien type stories, you talk about dragons, and they're these like big hulking, almost like Godzilla like creatures. But your dragons are more like the Asian influence, where they're, you know, they're longer, they're thinner. So did you do a lot of research specifically into like Asian culture of dragons, or was that already like kind of how you pictured dragons in your head?
I mean, no, I always thought that I always knew they were kind of going to be, at least for this story, I knew that they were going to be like Eastern dragons. But I think I did try a lot of different designs, because I don't think my dragons are, like, I did a lot of research. I remember, you know, I went on a lot of sites kind of just trying to, you know, understand what they were supposed to look like. And I think I altered it a little bit. They're not, you know, the way I draw them, their eyes are like a little bit more off to the side. They're not off, you know, in front. And I think they changed a little bit from Discover. Like from when I first started posting the comic on Discover, they definitely changed the way they look. Like the red dragon was never really a solid red. Now it's a solid red, but in the past it was more of this like brownish, you know, mud black. So I think, you know, it was a process, like a learning process for me, just, you know, seeing what works best. And I think I like figured out a design for them that I liked. So yeah.
So the other thing that's interesting to me also is because he went with the Eastern style, which, you know, we mentioned is kind of thinner and longer. It's really suited for kind of the layout of Webtoon. You know, it's the long vertical scroll and you get to play with that a lot. Mm-hmm. So did you have that in mind when you chose to design the dragons this way? Did you realize, oh, it's going to work really well with the kind of the long vertical panels?
I don't think I thought about it in that sense, as in like, it's going to be great for a vertical panel. But I think, you know, as I've been doing this long, you know, for as long as I have, you know, since I've been working on this comic almost 2 years, I think I'm getting a hang of the vertical scroll. And it's really cool because what you have is essentially like you have a camera that can pan down or just pans over, you know, over something. So you can do all kinds of like very interesting, kind of dynamic scenes. And I think it really works with dragons, like these long serpent-like, creatures that they can, you know, they can fill up the panel and they can, you can almost see a little bit of motion when you're scrolling past. So I think the vertical scroll definitely helps make them, you know, bigger and grander.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I've mentioned that to creators before. It's Webtoon is not they're not motion comics, but when you get the scroll going, sometimes you can get some of the advantages of a motion comic. It's really cool. Now I'm not a guy who fishes for spoilers, so if you don't want to say, that's perfectly fine. But as the story goes on, and I think that we may be kind of exploring the past and, you know, when dragons were kind of in charge, so to speak. Are there more than two? Mm-hmm. Can you give us a hint or not if there are?
I don't really want to give it away because I feel like it might be a spoiler. But, you know, I've definitely considered the possibility that there will be more than two.
Okay, so. Fair enough. now, when you so you kind of started with the dragons, and then when you went to build out the characters, the human characters mm-hmm. that inhabit the story, what was that process like? Did you start with the two main characters and build out from there? Did you start with like all of one faction or another? Like how? What was the process like in building out the main characters?
So for me, I think it was definitely like a challenge for me because I'd never done a comic. I wasn't used to kind of writing dialogue between characters. So kind of what you see in the preview is kind of was my test, basically. It's a revamp of the original test that I did. So in the test, you only see, or in the, you know, in the prologue, you only see kind of four characters, right? You see the two main, and then there's the two dragons off to the side. So it was a little bit of a test for me to see if I could kind of just do a comic with just two simple characters just speaking and kind of try to get a point across. I went from there, really. Like, I think it took a long time for me to really flesh out their characters and just understand what was, what was going on. In the beginning, I was just kind of making the comic as, you know, as a way to improve my drawing. I wasn't really that focused on I was focused on kind of telling a good story, but I didn't really know much about writing characters. And so I think it came to me, you know, in the months that followed, like when I saw that people were engaged in the story, I said, okay, I need to like work harder, you know, put a little bit more thought into this. So I think, you know, I developed them from there.
And so they're both really kind of stubborn. So I wonder, is that something that's a trait that you have, or did you just think it would kind of work to advantage to tell the story you wanted to tell?
I mean, I like that you say that they're both stubborn because I feel like, from what I see, a lot of people think that they're these, you know, exact opposites, you know, they're exact opposites and that, you know, opposites attract. But I think actually, you know, they both have, you know, they're both stubborn. They both have a lot in common. They both kind of act in a way that's, you know, similar to each other. They're meant to really complement each other, but also like butt heads at the same time. That's just the kind of thing I like to see in a story. Okay. So yeah, that's really the answer.
And then you mentioned the challenge of fleshing out the world, and when your fan base started getting engaged, that kind of inspired you to flesh it out more. Mm-hmm. Did you reach out to anyone for advice, or did you just like kind of take a look at what other strips were doing to get an idea? Like, what was that process like?
I think the world is inspired by a lot of things, but obviously, you know, I take inspiration from, you know, I watch a lot of historical dramas. Mm. So, you know, a lot of the fashion, like the buildings, kind of what you see is, you know, stuff that I think is really cool in this setting. And I want to try to bring it in. Or sometimes, you know, I look at, you know, MMORPG games and I say, wow, this is such like a great design, like the way they, you know, the way they implement this in their world. And so I kind of just, I look around, I'm always actively searching for things that are really interesting or that catch my attention. And I try to incorporate them into the story if I can. Obviously, I can't make it as grand as I want it because, you know, I'm only one person. But, I actively seek, you know, inspiration. I'm always looking for inspiration for stuff to kind of bring into the comic to make it, you know, more dynamic, more interesting, more like visually appealing.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that because I've had this conversation with other creators before. And when you're creating something, especially when you get to the point where you're doing it full time and you like never leave your house, mm-hmm. You can start to feel isolated, right? And then you don't have the interactions that inspire. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I tell people.
Oh yeah, you have to, I think you have to consume media in order to be able to kind of create your own.
Yeah, exactly. The people that aren't creators or they don't understand the creative process, they can, mm-hmm. sometimes for them, they don't necessarily understand it. They're like, well, wait, if you're behind on your deadlines or you have these deadlines, you need to get this work done. Like, why are you going to see a movie or watching TV or what? I'm like, you have to refill your tank as a creative person. You can't just create because you run out of ideas, and you need to be inspired yourself by consuming other people's creativity. And so
it's
like a constant cycle. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing I want to compliment you on that's really great about your story, and it especially is a little bit surprising for me because it's something that I think a lot of storytellers can struggle with. It takes a long time for them to get it right and to use it effectively. And that's your use of the cliffhanger. You really mm-hmm. end a lot of your strips, your episodes with really good cliffhangers that immediately you want to read the next one. So is that something you're really conscious of that you worked at, or did it come naturally to you?
I think for me in the beginning, I don't think I was like, when I was first making comics, I wasn't really thinking about it. But I think like as later on, I kind of learned. I was like, wait a minute. I think it's, you know, it's better when I end the chapter in this way, you know, or yeah, it seems like there's more engagement if I end the chapter in this way. And like, I kind of know subconsciously that, you know, what I'm doing is going to make people, you know, want to tear their hair out. But I kind of think it's a little bit fun to just to see the reactions that people have whenever I do end it on a cliffhanger. I don't think it's good to do it all the time, but I do think it's effective in kind of keeping the readers engaged. And the one thing that I do try to do, I really try to kind of avoid doing cliffhangers that don't have a payoff, because I myself really don't like cliffhangers without a payoff. So if I do a cliffhanger, I want to make sure that the next chapter is really worthwhile. It's not just kind of like something that, leaves the fans kind of to a dead end. And then, you know, they're expecting something and it's kind of, there's no payoff at the end for it.
Yeah.
Also,
is it a challenge? Because here's the thing I always think about cliffhangers. You have to, if you're planning to where you're going to end an episode on a cliffhanger, you still have to make sure that you're moving the story along. So it seems like it could be possibly a challenge in order to move the story along enough in an episode to then end on that cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of balancing the pacing, how fast you're telling the story to make sure you end on that cliffhanger to keep them coming back versus wanting to give them a good chunk of story, but you also don't, you want to keep the mystery and the suspense alive. You don't just want to give all the answers right away. because then the people mm-hmm. don't have a reason to keep coming back. So is that like something you always have to be like conscious of, like balancing pacing versus not giving away too much?
Yeah, and I think for me, sometimes it comes from the episode is too long for me to finish. You know, it's, you know, once you get to like 80 panels, you're like, I can't possibly end it where I want it. So, you know, sometimes it's actually more efficient to just cut the chapter a little bit short, save yourself a little bit of time. And then, you know, the audience is definitely going to feel engaged. You know, they're going to want to know what happened next. As long as you end it on something that's, if it's a worthwhile cliffhanger, I say it's okay to do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it can be a challenge. Yeah.
And so the other thing that's interesting too about your process in creating this story is, like you said, you've always had a goal to kind of tell, have your own comic, tell a sequential story with sequential art. But you started it more focused on kind of the visual and improving your artwork. So you didn't necessarily start it from like a storyteller. Like so many people that I talk to from Webtoon, they come at it more from the writer's perspective. Like they have a story they want to tell, and maybe they have some creative talent. Maybe they don't really have artistic talent, so they hire an artist. So they're coming at it from, I know the story, I know the characters and all that. And so from that perspective, they may already have an idea of like the themes that their story explores or touches on. You came at it from the other direction with, yeah, I kind of have an idea of the story I want to tell, but I'm more locked into the visuals. So
yeah.
At what point did you start thinking about, well, these are the themes that are interesting to me that I think the story is going to explore? Did it happen organically, or at some point did you realize, oh, these are the themes I want to explore and it's going to inform the story? Or have you even thought about it at all at this point?
So, I mean, like I said, for me, it was always like, you know, I wanted a story that I would enjoy reading, you know, so I didn't really think about the themes. But ever since, you know, I've started taking it really seriously. In the 2 years that I've been working on the comic almost, I think I sit and I think about this story all the time. And then nowadays, and like, it's definitely a story that explores, you know, themes of like sacrifice, kind of, you know, how far are you willing to go to save somebody? How far, kind of, the role of the ruler, and like how you can separate your own ego to act in the interest of others. You know, so I think there's definitely, it has themes, but I think they happen more organically for me. I really focus more on, I like to focus on, you know, the characters and kind of how they develop throughout the story. And, you know, when I started, it's like you said, I had this, you know, I had like a general idea, but at least, you know, I had an ending in mind, which I think is really important when you work on a story, so that you don't kind of get lost and, you know, lose yourself along the way. So I had an ending from the very beginning, but I just kind of didn't know, you know, I knew a little bit about the beginning, a little bit about the middle, and a lot about the ending, but I just, you know, so I just kind of started from there.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to do it, to not, because here's the other thing too. There's so many people that I talk to, like, I had this idea for a comic, and they'll have an outline that's like outlined down to every single panel. And then as a creator, especially if you're, I mean, you can get away with that if you're illustrating it yourself, but if you're going to bring on another person to draw it, then it's like you haven't given them any room or for the story and the characters to kind of change or grow organically if you have it all locked in. So I think having an idea of who the characters are and knowing what the ending is, and then you kind of start telling the story, and the characters will let you know how they get to that ending. Like, it happens organically. They kind of take on a life of their own a little bit. So I think it's good to kind of leave yourself space to change things if you feel like you need to, or if the story or the characters feel like they're growing in a direction that maybe even you, when it started, didn't realize. You know what I mean?
Now, yeah, and I think it's in general, like, I think it's really just good to, you know, make sure your story is very simple. I mean, because you can go from simple to complex, but you can't go from like complex and make it simple.
Yeah.
So, you know, I heard like a good rule of thumb for writing was just for like when you're originally writing a story is to just be able to sum up your entire story in one sentence. So if you can do that, you know, like take, you know, Harry Potter, you can say, you know, you know, a kid goes to wizarding school. You know, it's very simple and like straightforward. And from that, it becomes very complex. And like the same with Sub-Zero, you know, a princess is, you know, forced in like a political marriage with an enemy prince. And it's very simple and straightforward. And, but from that, you know, it becomes this whole other thing.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, people need to like, in general, I really advise just keeping the, you know, the idea very simple.
Yeah, and I like the way you approach it too, like we were talking about with themes. You didn't necessarily, because I talk about like themes and how people can relate to stories a lot with different creators. And I find that if you're trying to tell a story because you want to explore a certain theme, it comes across as really preachy. You know what I mean? Like I want to tell a story about equality or diversity. Then all of a sudden the story feels like it's like banging you over the head with those ideas. But if you could just tell a story with characters that are diverse or characters that are inclusive, then the story can become about that kind of organically. And then what happens is people project their own ideas on it. And then that's when it becomes relatable. Cause you mentioned, kind of the themes you see starting to emerge in the story you're telling in Sub-Zero is about, you know, what it is to be a good ruler and sacrifice for, you know, your people and your land, your kingdom. And I see that in it 100%, but like I see other things in it too that I think are very relatable. And that's like, where do you belong? Like, where's your identity? That's a kind of a theme that always really interests me. And I think it's so relatable to everybody, especially younger readers, you know, people in high school, when you're kind of becoming an adult and you're trying to discover who you are. And I see that in your characters too. They have all this responsibility. You know, Clove and Cairo have this responsibility as leaders of their kingdoms, and they have these expectations that are put on them, but they're really young people trying to discover who they are also. You know, their identities aren't necessarily set. And we see it in Cairo and kind of his generals who think they can kind of, you know, rule the kingdom for him because he's not strong enough, and they don't look at him as a king or a ruler. And so I think that when you tell a story and you're not coming at it from theme first but character first, that it gives the reader a chance to put some of themselves into the story. And it makes it relatable. So I think that Sub-Zero's done a really good job of that also.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I wanted to talk a little bit more about designing the look. We mentioned the dragons. And I'm curious because sometimes I'll see panels where, you know, we're looking at the dragon maybe in the background. And then we see Clove or Cairo in the foreground. And I notice similarities in kind of the angles of their features. Is that something that you do purposefully?
I think it's just, what do you mean by similarities in their features? Like the dragons look very similar?
Like the blue, the azure dragon, like the lines of like the cheekbones or the eye, the shape of the eyes will kind of mirror like the same sort of contours of Clove's face, or the eye shape is the same. So it almost...
Oh, yeah. No, I did that. Yeah, it's all really intentionally done. Like, they're all... I mean, because I wanted them to, you know, I wanted a way to kind of connect her with the dragon and connect him with the dragon. And I remember, you know, I had a talk with my editor about this, but he was telling me that, you know, in general, it's very difficult to kind of do stories with animals because it's very hard to kind of... they're not very expressive. You know, they don't have like eyebrows,
right.
You know, so you can't, it's very difficult to show emotion. So, you know, I was just kind of thinking of ways that I could connect her with this dragon, or like to show that there's more of a connection with them. And so that's why, you know, that's why they have these like dragon markings on them. I put a lot of thought into the dragon designs, and like, but I will say the eye markings that show up on their faces whenever it's, you know, this emotional high peak, you know, that's done like with purpose. Everything is done intentionally just to like make sure that the audience knows that, you know, there's somebody else present, or like there's another presence in the room. And, you know, I just kind of wanted to depict them as these like large, you know, beings that were basically like taking up the entire room, even though they weren't physically present, but they were definitely in there.
Yeah, it's so great to think about it. I mean, because like you said before, they're these mythical beasts and they're larger than life, you know, and these two characters are inhabited by them in a way. And it almost seems like sometimes, especially when it comes to Clove, she doesn't necessarily even understand how or communicate, you know, there's times where she tries to communicate and, you know, she can't make the shift. And it's so interesting to me, the like that crux of it, you know, going back to the whole idea of her and her identity and who is she, where Kyra seems to have a little bit, he's a little further down the path, it seems.
Yeah, and we have, I feel, you know, I can't wait to get to it, but we haven't really explored, like, you know, she has dreams with the dragon, but like, he too has dreams, you know, but you don't see it from his perspective. So, you know, I definitely can't wait. Like, later on in the story, you will get to see more of kind of the way he sees the dragons, the way he, you know, communicates with them. Like, it's, yeah, I can't wait to get to those scenes.
Now, do you have an idea how many episodes it's going to go, or are you going to break it up into multiple seasons, or are you still
it's definitely going to be broken up in multiple seasons, just so I can have time to sort of flesh out certain events. I have points that I know I want to hit, but I want, it's more about kind of organizing it in a way that's, you know, fulfilling for each season. So, and in terms of episodes, it's definitely probably over 100.
Oh, wow.
I would say it's over 100. It's just because, like, I've tried to really condense it, but I can't imagine just being able to I'm already at episode 20, and I feel like I haven't even told, like, 5% of what I want to say. But I think, you know, you're always, you know, with comics, you always have to kind of decide what, you know, what you can keep and what you can't. So, you know, we'll see. Right now, I think I'm planning around 100, but you never know.
Right, right. Now, what advice do you have for other aspiring creators that are trying to get started? Do you think they should give Webtoon a try? Is that a good platform? Is that how you got started? Just went to the Discover side and said, "This is where I'm gonna upload."
Yeah, 100%. I really recommend Webtoons. I think it's probably like the platform for me just blew my mind how well designed it was for, you know, for just young creators. And, you know, like I said, you know, when I was young, I was looking at these, you know, webcomic artists that were just posting their stuff on individual sites. But, and, you know, some of these comics, they were so great, but they never, you know, they never got enough traction because people didn't know about them. But, you know, with Webtoons, they have this, like, built-in audience that's actively seeking new content, actively always looking for stuff. And, you know, for me, you know, I've been trying to really make a comic for 10 years, but I never really felt like, I didn't know how Sub-Zero was going to go. And truthfully, I feel like if it wasn't for the support of the fans and, like, the constant kind of engagement and the encouragement I got, it would have been really hard to kind of dedicate as much time as I have to it, because, you know, it really takes up the majority of my time. So you really have to kind of have like an active fan base, people who really appreciate, you know, all your work too, or just seeing how people are engaged in the comic, in the story. It's really helpful to you as a creator to just continue, because like I said, the amount of work that goes into making a Webtoons is ridiculous. Like, I don't think Webtoons creators get enough credit for all the stuff that they need to do.
Yeah, it kind of, you have to sacrifice a lot of free time, all your free time, basically. Yeah,
exactly.
And if you don't have people that are appreciated, I imagine that sacrifice is a lot harder. Or maybe feels like it's not worth it. Have you had a chance to, you know, you mentioned the fan community. Have you had a chance to engage with other Webtoon creators and kind of become part of that community as well?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I talk to so many people nowadays. When I started, even on Discover, I remember I was part of, like, you know, there's definitely groups of, like, people who hang out with each other. But, you know, you can definitely, everyone's super friendly. Like, yeah, it might be, I think people are competitive and, you know, in in mindset, but everybody's super close. Everybody's very friendly. Everybody is, you know, super willing to help and share, you know, kind of their tips and tricks onto how, you know, how to go on about creating a webtoon. And I think, you know, as long as you're, you know, as long as you have time and you can try to do it, I really recommend it, because like I said, you know, the audience is built in, everything is kind of there for you. You just have to do it. That's, you know, that's my advice. You know, just doing it is the hardest part, sitting down and actually making it. But once, you know, if you can do all of that, you're definitely, like, you're on your way. You're already doing more than I think a lot of people, you know.
Now, looking back on the journey that you've had, if there's anything you could do differently, any decisions you could make differently, or kind of knowing what you know now, if there's some, you know, a decision you could have made or been better informed, is there anything you would change?
So about the story or about, I mean,
about your journey. It doesn't have to be about the story, just about your journey to becoming a creator.
I think I would have, you know, I would have planned better. I think, I mean, that, but that, that's something that I think catches up to everybody. You know, you realize you kind of have to, the way you planned it originally, sometimes it's not feasible. It's right. Really not. Cause you know, you have to remember you're one person. You can't, you know, you can't make it as grand as you want. And you're, you know, when you get put on a deadline, it's really hard to kind of meet every single thing. It's really hard to do every single thing you want to do without kind of compromising something. So right. I think, you have to understand, know your limits, kind of. You have to understand how, you know, how much you can do and how much of a workload you can take on. And before you start actually doing the comic, because sooner or later it might catch up to you, and you don't want to be in a spot where you just kind of, you know, you don't have any ideas or you haven't planned enough and you have to, you know, go on a hiatus or something. Because, you know, Webtoons readers, they're, you know, they're always kind of, you know, when's the next one coming out? So,
yeah, you don't want to burn yourself out, because those Webtoon readers, they're voracious, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I really want to thank you for taking the time to join me, June. It's been great to talk about your journey and to talk about Sub-Zero. Congratulations on getting picked up for feature from the Discover side. Is there anything else you want to share with our listeners? I'm sure a lot of them are Sub-Zero fans.
Well, you know, I just want to tell them, you know, thank you guys for always, you know, supporting my comic. You know, I can't believe how big it's gotten in the last 2 years since I actually started working on it. And I'm so grateful to every one of you who every week, you know, you guys are sitting there kind of counting down the minutes until, you know, the next update comes out. It really, you know, I can't express how much, how thankful I am to know you guys are there.
That's great. So any of our listeners who want to follow you on social media and find out about your work and when new stuff's coming up, where's the best place to follow you online?
I mean, I think I'm everywhere. You know, Instagram, it's Instagram JunePer. Just remember the 3 R's at the end. Twitter, I'm pretty active on Twitter. Tumblr, everywhere, honestly. If there's social media, you can probably find me on it.
All right, listeners, and I'll put links to the Twitter and the Instagram and the Tumblr in the show notes. So yeah, you probably won't have a hard time finding June. Just Google June Purr. But if you want, you could just go to the show notes, click and find the links there.
Mm-hmm.
Again, June, thanks for joining me. It's great. I look forward to many, many more episodes of Sub-Zero. I feel like we're just getting started, and it sounds like maybe we are. So yeah, it's been great to chat. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you so much.